Welcome back. For this one, I sat down with Mr. Nick Garland, CEO of Simple Mining, a US-based hosting company that's been around and has recently announced a larger deal with Alps Blockchain, a European-based, Italian-based miner. I want to learn more about that and how the hosting business is treating them today. Let me know what you thought and let's get into it. All right, welcome back to Hashrd Up. Hello, Nick. How are you doing?
Jesse, everything's good. Appreciate you having me here and looking forward to the conversation today.
For sure. Before we get started, let's have a quick look at some mining stuff. We are recording at block height 893647 and hash price looks like this. We're at 48 now. We've got a nice green candle pulling up hash price and most likely also difficulty and not so near future. Next difficulty adjustment for some reason is 7%, 7.5% down. That's probably going to change. Bitcoin at 93,000 and we are at 850 exahash and growth is insane. How much growth are you seeing, Nick, these days with Simple Mining? Do you still find customers come to you plentiful, or is it more subdued now with margins being more slim?
No, happy to answer that. I think actually you were just hitting on difficulty, so maybe I'll just hit on that quickly. Difficulty is going to go up into the right forever, for sure, but it's pretty interesting. I'm from New York. I was in the city a few weeks ago. Anthony Pompliano had a event here, Bitcoin Investor Day or whatever, and CEO of Marathon, of Riot, were here talking about their future expansions and all this good stuff. And don't want to speak out of turn, but I believe Riot was saying their gigawatt Cortica facility, is 400 megawatts of Bitcoin miners. And now they're transitioning the other 600 to HPC, and AI. And you're seeing a lot of these public companies transitioning their fleets to HPC. I don't know kind of what information I can share. We do work with some public companies, but I'm sure a lot of it is public with who's transitioning their fleets to what. So when you kind of look at hash rate growth over time, there kind of are diminishing returns just over time from a percentage standpoint to begin with. But with a lot of these public and private miners moving to HPC and chasing that, it will be interesting to see what hash rate growth looks like with that transition right now. A lot of capacity at this point in time, the low hanging fruit is taken. Building sites is not quick and easy anymore. There's not just hundreds of megawatts of just empty available capacity, turnkey at this point in time. And now with the HPC transition, it'll be interesting to see this dynamic over the next few months and years. But to answer your question, Simple Mining, we're continuing to scale. We started the company about 5 years ago with one container and just reinvested back into the business, continued to scale. Started with kind of the retail miner, the home miner that was looking for a good solution to plug machines in, maybe didn't have access to cheap power, doesn't know how to fix the machines, all that good stuff. So we became a solution for that, quickly saw a lot more interest from retail, which, spanned from family offices, business owners, et cetera, et cetera. And now we've kind of added a new division to our company, which is a lot of institutions. There's a lot of groups that are well-capitalized, looking to build sites, maybe don't know how to, maybe don't have access to the power, don't know how to manage it. And we've continued to build out some different avenues. So currently, we're about 75 megawatts operational across 7 sites in Iowa. Existing expansion plans with LOIs and, different constructions in place in different sites will probably be closer to 200 megawatts by end of Q4. With another 100 or 200 megawatts in the pipeline that we're hoping to come online, early next year if all goes well. So,
this episode is sponsored by Hashbranch, the easiest way to mine Bitcoin in the US. Sourcing hardware and rack space usually is a mess. Bad deal structures, misaligned incentives, and no visibility after deployment. I have placed tens of thousands of ASICs in partnership with Hashbranch. What I like most is that they cut through the noise. Fair pricing, aligned terms, and access to hosting that actually works. Use code HASHRATEUP100, visit hashbranch.com today to get $100 off of each miner that you order. As Simple Mining, how do you feel about the hosting market sort of going forward in the next 4 to 8 years? You know, retail pays 8 cents, 7.5. Maybe your institutional clients, I don't know what they pay, maybe 6.5, six, lower sixes. Is that a business model that you think is going to carry on existing in the same way? Or do you feel like with margins compressing, that's, you know, you might have to fill all of that yourself, because nobody's going to be able to afford your margins?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good question. I think my simple, kind of from a first principle standpoint in any business, it's the free market's going to dictate what makes the most sense. If Bitcoin's $1 million and mining's super profitable, I'll probably plug in an S9 in New York City in a skyscraper and it'll be profitable again, right? So it's going to depend. It's going to be market dependent. You know, if hash price is $15 per petahash per day, inevitably you're going to have a few different scenarios. Nobody's going to mine Bitcoin, which I don't foresee that happening. Or you're going to have a lot of companies just have to get more and more competitive with their rates. I think we were speaking internally about this the other day. We started this business 5 years ago, which is not a long time for traditional businesses, 5 years of business. But in this industry, Bitcoin's only 15, 16 years old. It's the hosting market's kind of a newer thing in the last 5 years. So we've seen so many companies come and go. And if we go back to 4 years ago, there were companies selling hosting at 10 cents. And people were paying 10 cents because an S19 was, you know, making $40 a day. So I think it's just going to be market. The free market's going to determine what's going to happen here. If hash price is very low and people start offering hosting to retail at 6 cents, or maybe it's a rev share or whatever it might be, then the only way for us or for other companies to stay competitive is to lower our cost over time. It's kind of a question mark. That's kind of my quick thoughts on what might happen. I think over time, we're naturally going to see more and more institutions wanting to build, you know, own and operate their sites. Retail kind of ebbs and flows, and we're continuing to build that and build out a really good offering for that. But it's really just going to be market driven. You know, if Bitcoin's $0 or $1 million, that's going to dictate a lot of things here in the next 4 years. So.
Do you have a base case for your business, like where you see hash price moving?
Yeah, I personally don't. I'm kind of the mindset just up and to the right over time. Short term, I don't think anybody knows what's going to happen. There's curveballs thrown every day in the markets, and I think everybody was hyper bullish on the market with, you know, the geopolitical kind of landscape here with the election and all this kind of stuff, and the market's done nothing but go straight down for a few months. So, I think it's up and to the right over a long enough time scale is my safe answer. But I tend to stay away from technical analysis, and kind of my opinion on where I think hash price and price is going in the short term, because nobody knows, right? So,
yeah, fair enough. And when you guys started this, Nick, like 5 years ago, did you look at the market and see what's already out there, who else is hosting, what they're offering, and if so, how did you plan to start out to stand out and compete? Yeah.
So Adam, our CEO, started the business. He came from a cell phone repair background, scaled that to several locations, and started fixing a lot of ASICs and GPUs, and then kind of went down the Bitcoin rabbit hole. So that's kind of how Simple Mining was born. It was born out of the back of one of his cell phone stores, just mining in the back wasn't really a scalable solution in the back of one of his other businesses, and worked with the local utility company to get this up and running. So of course, in any business, you're going to see what your competitors are doing and see what they're doing well and maybe what they're not doing well, and try to fill those gaps. And I think we've just more or less, there's cryptos, you know, this industry is the wild, wild west. Bitcoin mining, just the crypto industry in general, everything is just there's not a lot of oversight and, you know, practical, you know, business practices, you know, that people are using. You know, in any other business, there's just business 101 things that you do. And in this industry, it's kind of just all hands off, you know, everything's fair game and people lose a lot of money, get scammed, you know, this and that. And I think what we've found is just we come from a pretty simplistic mindset of just, we want to underpromise and overdeliver with all of our offerings. And we're not doing anything overly complicated. We're running a data center. We're acting as a property manager is kind of how we see it. And we're just going to provide a very high level of service. And as long as we underpromise to our clients and communicate in any business, people are going to be happy. And I think that's when you're in this industry specifically, and you have a lot of bad actors and people coming and going and stealing money and stealing ASICs and this and that, it makes normal businesses look really, really good. And it makes us look like a superhero because there's just so many bad actors. So I think it's kind of just common sense, more or less, again, just business 101. And we're always looking, you know, I think the big thing we're always looking to do is solve for problems in the industry. We can't control price. But if you look at a lot of our offerings that we do, you know, a lot of things we do are very unique to our company. So we include all the repairs for our clients for 12 months. That was born out of Bitcoin was 15,000. We didn't want to charge our clients a few hundred bucks to fix machines and, you know, make the mining experience a poor experience, even though it's not our fault. So let's just do these for free. You know, let's include it. And then it became a marketing, you know, well, if we're going to include it for free, we might as well market that we're doing them for free. We let our clients pause if it's not profitable. You know, so we have a lot of different value adds that we feel solve for problems that miners have had in the past. If your machines go offline for an extended period of time, we flip on our own company hash rate for clients through like a hash rate replacement program. So there's different things we're trying to solve for. But again, it's just overall we feel it's pretty simple and straightforward, which a lot of people in this industry just don't make it simple and straightforward. So.
Yeah, what you say reminds me of what Sanjay Gupta talked to me about a year ago on the show, and also mentioned recently on the mining pod, is that we celebrate failure rates of only 5%, whereas in other industries that is like completely unacceptable, you know. And you're absolutely right. There's so many people out there claiming facilities. And when I started out, I realized this pretty quickly, like on, you know, the Telegram troughs of the Bitcoin mining industry is pretty hectic. And there's not a lot of professionality around this. There's not a lot of processes. And as soon as you deal with institutions, it just sort of, yeah, comes as a detriment. Or it becomes harder to deal with institutions if that's sort of where all of your business is typically done. When you talk to institutions, and the deal with Alps is public, like how does that work? How do you approach those clients differently than you would maybe retail? Is there different value adds that are important to them? Or is it all the same?
Yeah, institutions are a lot easier to work with than retail. Not in a bad way, but just, you know, retail in any industry is going to be more customer support. You know, if a client has one machine with us and that one machine's offline, that's 100% of their fleet. So we've had to build out all custom solutions to accommodate for that MOQ1 client. So when you're talking about dealing with an institution that might have 5 megawatts, 10 megawatts, 50 megawatts, and you're managing maybe a site just for that institution with one client, it becomes a lot easier operationally versus an on-site technician goes into a container with 40 different clients in that container. There's a lot of different nuanced things that we have to build out to account for that. So the institutions is a lot simpler, you know, to have conversations with. Obviously, you don't have to do the whole Bitcoin 101 and what is Bitcoin. They're, you know, going to be much more capitalized. And it's more of just, depending on the institution you're dealing with, more or less kind of where we feel we become a good synergy and a good partner for a lot of these companies is a lot of them are just very well capitalized. In the Alps situation, they're a great partner in this kind of 50 megawatt deal we're building. And they're in Italy and they want to make a presence here in the US. And it's going to be very difficult for them to come here and build a site on their own. So having a partnership with somebody like Simple Mining where we have access to capacity, we know how to build sites. You know, if we're building a site for an institution, they're getting kind of our whole suite of services. You know, we have 75 employees. We're going to, you know, utilize our warehouse for anything they may need. We're going to utilize our repair center, just kind of our whole hub of services to really make the process really simple. I guess it's very similar retail or institutional as far as like we're providing a white glove service if we're building a site, if we're hosting, whatever it might be. It's just at a different scale. When you start looking at these companies that are coming into small town Iowa, for example, these utility companies aren't going to want to work with corporate America. They want to work with somebody that's boots on the ground, that grew up in Iowa, that can, you know, talk about whatever they talk about in Iowa. I'm not an Iowa native, but it goes a long way being a local there. It's kind of old school business, you know, handshake agreements and that sort of thing. So that's a big part of it. And, you know, we have all of our local contractors. We hiring in a town of 500 people is not very easy if you're from another state or another country. So we're able to come in and just provide that value of saying, hey, we can build a site at a very competitive cost. We have really good access to cheap power. We can do things quickly, and we can kind of do the A to Z of managing the site, you know, hiring employees, you know, and doing everything to make it very hands off for these institutions, more or less. But yeah, I feel that's kind of where we come in to fill that void. Now, you do run into the situation where a lot of these institutions want to remain vertically integrated, and they want to do it themselves. And, you know, we want to build the site, we want to manage it, and et cetera, et cetera. And that's all great and dandy, but it's not always a reality. So there is a lot of demand for, you know, a lot of conversations we're having that aren't public right now with different public and private companies where they're looking for capacity. And I think the biggest bottleneck is everybody wants available capacity. Everybody wants, you know, an empty sub.
Rack space now.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the biggest thing, even for the institutions. So it's like on the retail side, we've solved that. We have, you know, not infinite capacity, but we have capacity to continue to accommodate, you know, clients of a few megawatts or less at any point in time. On the institutional side, if you want to build a 50 megawatt site now and you write us a check, it's going to take us 9 to 12 months to put that capacity online, because most of these larger sites are going to require building a sub. You know, there's inevitable lead times for that. And then if we go back to the first point of this conversation was, you know, network hash rate growth. If Bitcoin was $1 million tomorrow and you had an injection of billions of dollars into this industry, you're not going to have rack space just appear tomorrow, right? Like the bull case of mining is if the market moves higher quickly and you outpace network hash rate growth, that's the bull case. And for these institutions, there's a rush to get hash rate online. But, you know, this project with Alps, for example, I mean, it's a 9 to 12 month lead time from when we started the project. And now you throw in the tariffs on top of everything. And now for us as a business, you know, or any public or private miner, there's a decision to make here of, do we import and pay a much higher tariff? A lot of this manufacturing is done in China, for example, for some of the containers, for substations. And, you know, there's different decisions that have to be made. You may have to reroute your manufacturing to a different country of origin that may have a lower tariff. And now there's an extended lead time because you got to kind of redo the process. So there's a lot of things up in the air with that, which is also just another, I'm bearish on hash rate growth in the short term, I would say, because of some of these different variables. So
it's interesting. So I was going to say that earlier, that's why you say hash rate or hash price moving up and to the right? Because what you just said is, I think we share the same sentiment there, that it's a lot easier to pour 100 million into Bitcoin, the asset, than it is to bring a hash rate online, because you have employees, infrastructure, rack space, lead times. So the Bitcoin price can go up a lot faster than the hash rate can, especially if you talk about, you know, if we're talking from a base of, let's say, I don't know, 850 exahashes right now, for difficulty to go up 2%, it now takes that much more megawatts, right, than it did when hash price or hash rate was at 400, right? And so the bigger the network gets, the harder it gets for difficulty to move upwards, theoretically. But yeah.
I think 5 years ago, it was very easy for just a lot of capacity to come online very quickly. And just inevitably right now, it's to your point, it's just going to be a little harder and harder. You know, from a Bitcoin denominated perspective, hash price will trend down over time, right? You have a halving every 4 years. But from a dollar denominated perspective, again, if you're bullish on price and price moves higher, then, you know, hash price, in my opinion, would go up and to the right over time. Maybe not forever, but for periods of times, you know, that's kind of from a dollar denominated perspective is what I see, hopefully. Otherwise, there's no point to mine Bitcoin. So,
The tariffs you mentioned, do they threaten to put a significant spanner in the works for you guys? Did you follow-up question, consider building, because that's at the end the idea of these tariffs is that stuff gets built in the US. Did you consider building containers in the US, transformers in the US?
Yeah, and that's kind of out of our control. So when we started the business, we built our own containers, actually. And they work really well. If you go on our social media, you may see like different containers on our sites. We have some smaller containers we built for a few years, then just kind of realized we're not in the container making business. And if we want to scale, it was actually about the same cost or cheaper for us to just have somebody else do it and be hands off. We don't have massive, you know, major factories where we can produce these things quickly. And we didn't want to invest into that. It wasn't a good investment for us. So, you know, we partner with Giga, for example. They're based out of Texas. Matt, their CEO, great team. And their infrastructure is awesome, but just...
Don't they build in China though as well, Nick?
Yeah. And that's just where like everybody's building overseas. So like, you know, I'm not an expert on kind of, you know, where this all is going to lead over the next few months, but you know, manufacturing moving to the US sounds great, but the reality is labor is still probably going to be cheaper overseas. And there's probably a lot of different reasons why people are overseas. And I don't think you can't just shift an entire industry over quickly at scale to the US to do these sorts of things. So we don't have like the ability to just say, oh, let's manufacture this in this country. There is that ability, but we're also constrained. And so is every other public and private miner with, you know, there's a few people building these things, and, you know, there are opportunities that could come up if a large company is offloading some infrastructure. Those create for some unique opportunities, but at scale, you know, depending on the transformers you need and depending on the containers you need and this and that, for example, the Hydro site, those are brand new containers. They're brand new machines from Bitmain. It's like a new product, basically. Nobody has it in the US. So they have to be imported. And anybody that's going to get them into the US is going to have to import them and either wait for tariffs to go down or pay a higher tariff, you know, depending on the country they're importing from. So, yeah, I just don't think in the long term you see manufacturing move maybe domestically if these tariffs kind of stay, which is, you know, I don't know kind of what's going to happen here. I think Scott Bessent is talking in 20 minutes, you know, the Secretary of the Treasury, and, you know, maybe about the Chinese tariffs. We'll see kind of what happens. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see what kind of happens here. But I just don't see in the short term that transitioning quickly to the US. It's not feasible. So
that guy is talking a bunch these days, trying to calm markets down. Think,
yeah, my technical analysis is not good. I'm not a good trader, but I saw we made a pretty good move in Bitcoin price finally. So I saw he said something yesterday about the tariffs, you know, basically coming down from China. And who knows? We're probably going to find out in 20 minutes here. You know, maybe we get some bullish news here. But
it's we're at this point, Nick, where it was like, okay, in either in 20 minutes everything goes up or everything goes to absolute shit, you know. And it's crazy that in the largest capitalistic economy in the world and global economy, everything sort of hangs in the balance with one person speaking in front of a microphone. It's pretty crazy. And it, you know, that's where it gets very philosophical. I mean, you don't have to get into that. But my thought here is just like, okay, either the tariffs stick and all the manufacturing moves to the US, but I somehow have my doubts that the economy doesn't completely collapse beforehand. Inflation goes completely out of whack because of what you just said, because people have to pay the tariffs because they cannot build transformers in the US because it doesn't exist, right? And they need to do it now. And then somebody like Alps comes along, has a big investor. Now they have a mandate to deploy that money and they can't just press pause, you know? So there's a lot of stuff in motion. And yeah, I really hope these tariffs stop at not just for this industry, but for, I don't know, the global economic situation, I guess. Yeah, not really a question there. Besides, how does it effectively affect you, these tariffs? Like, what does the offering look like right now? If I wanted to start mining with you today, what would you advise?
We kind of formed a strategic partnership, coincidentally, right before all this tariff stuff happened. So we try to carry turnkey units at all times. you know, kind of in small batches, you know, 100, 200 units. We formed a strategic partnership with a very large group domestically that had a lot of inventory of S21s, S21 pluses, pros, X, all the newer models. So we have plenty of inventory that's in stock, so we don't have to, you know, deal with the tariffs. There's been a pretty big issue with customs, which should be cleared up now, but between September to really February, a lot of stuff was getting held up. You have a lot of people in this industry, and I'm sure it's going to only increase, that kind of, you know, underdeclare the value of a lot of these ASICs. So I'm sure you'll still have people importing stuff and getting it through. But, you know, if we're importing, we need to do things by the book as a company. And if we're going to import a couple hundred machines or 1,000 machines, we have to declare everything and pay the full tariff. It's just, you know, we're not going to blacklist our business with customs and risk a seizure at the border because we don't declare the value correctly. So, you know, you'll see on a small scale, like some of these suppliers still, you know, doing these sorts of things and sneaking things through. But at a large scale, you know, for us as a company, we have turnkeys, but just like broader speaking in the industry, it is going to be interesting because nobody's going to import units at scale right now. Unless Bitcoin is moving higher and it makes sense and you don't care about paying the tariff, but nobody wants to have carrying risk of paying an extra even 10% out of, you know, Southeast Asia, Malaysia, Thailand, Indonesia was 2.6%. Now it's 12.6, I believe. Nobody's going to want to import. I guess the flip side of that is in 90 days, so I think in like June or July, the tariffs, if nothing changes out of Southeast Asia, will be between, you know, like 28 and 38% or somewhere in there. So then there's maybe the flip side of it where maybe people do import now because they're nervous of those tariffs later. My kind of take on everything and the conversations we're having with some really big players in the space is everybody's sitting on their hands and just going to wait and see, because every other day there's a, like you said, somebody gets on the microphone and says something else. And we have no idea, you know, just in the last 2 weeks, there's been so many changes, good or bad, with the tariff situation. So, you know, hopefully in the next 4 weeks, there's a good direction and good clarity on like what this all is going to look like. Because it is a lot of just, we're going to sit on our hands and see what happens. You know, so it'll be interesting to see. But if the tariffs are here to stay for longer, and hopefully they're not higher for longer, you know, or whatever, but it'll create a really, really interesting dynamic in the ASIC market where there's just not going to be a lot of inventory. And then whoever has the inventory, that inventory, in my opinion, would have a premium, especially if the price of Bitcoin's higher. So it'll be interesting to see. And then kind of the flip side of that also is just, you know, does Bitmain have to substantially cut their pricing if tariffs are higher, because they're not going to have any demand? You know, who's going to buy a machine? Hypothetically, tariffs are 40%. Who's going to buy machines at a 40% tariff? Nobody. Unless Bitcoin's, you know, $250,000. It's not going to happen. So now this Bitmain, they have kind of, you know, and I'm not all super tied in with their exact agreement with like TSMC, but Bitmain has to order, you know, a certain amount of chips on a monthly or quarterly or whatever basis. And they have to continue moving through these machines. And if they have no demand, you know, now what? So now Bitmain just has a lot of supply. There's not a lot of supply in the US. Does Bitmain have to drop their pricing? So I can see both sides of it, and I don't know which way. I don't think in the short term Bitmain's just going to like cut their pricing by 40%. But if these tariffs are here to stay for a long period of time, maybe you see a situation where suppliers have no choice but to adjust and factor in the tariff into their pricing, because the tariff is an all-in price for us. You know, we buy equipment, the shipping, the tariffs, everything else. Like, you know, when people are calculating their ROI, or, you know, which nobody can predict, but when you're pricing these things, you're factoring all that in. And if we have to add an extra 40% on the equipment, then the math doesn't math, right? So
the math has to math. It does. Exactly. Or it means hash rate growth happens elsewhere outside of the US. Could also happen. But so then what's the next?
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
No, I think that's definitely a possibility. Not in the short term. I think hash rate's going to continue to grow worldwide, but the US is the biggest importer of ASICs, at least new gen ASICs, like at the moment. And there's just a lot of geopolitical instability in other countries. I mean, you've seen it with Russia, you've seen it with Kazakhstan, Paraguay, Venezuela. Ethiopia is like the big one now. Not going to say I know what's going to happen there, but if I just look at the natural evolution of, you know, how stuff has gone in these other countries, you know, there's just an inevitable kind of, there's just risks with moving to these other countries. And, you know, if you're a family office or you're a large public or private company, are you going to go deploy $50-100 million in a random country that is a 15-hour plane ride away to, you know, handle things when they go wrong? So I think there is going to be some of that in certain countries for sure. But I think the US is kind of, you have the Trump family, you know, American Bitcoin, I believe they're working to raise funds and build Bitcoin mining sites in the US. I mean, the US is going to remain, in my opinion, the Bitcoin mining capital of the world. And even with the tariffs, I think, you know, not to get political and all that kind of stuff, but I think Trump's kind of very pro-business overall long-term. And clearly this administration has been more pro-Bitcoin, even though the price doesn't reflect that. They're more pro-Bitcoin. And I just, the amount of jobs that miners are creating in the US alone, you know, there's billion-dollar companies, you know, Marathon, Riot, CleanSpark, you know, whatever, really, really large companies. And I don't see this industry moving away from the US anytime soon.
It is where all the capital is. And that's where all the newest Gen ASICs go there. Question is like, you know, talk 5 years from now. Now, I don't know, if the dollar continues to go weaker, purchasing power of other currencies goes up, like the euro, maybe the Europeans realize at some point that Bitcoin mining is a good thing for their grid. Who knows, right? I'd be also interested to see what happens once the Trumps realize that they also have to pay the tariffs and their mining now is becoming a bit difficult. Who knows? Maybe that'll help.
Maybe it's a good thing, yeah. So maybe they realize we got to suspend the tariffs on just Bitcoin miners. So
Hashrate Up is sponsored by solomining.de, the place to buy open source home and solo mining devices like the BitX. With about 20 watts of usage, these solo mining devices are perfect to play the lottery from home or from the office. Get 5% off with the code Hashrate Up. Thanks to the legends at solomining.de for sponsoring the content. Yeah, but it's going to be interesting to see where that goes. Speaking about ASIC generations, and like, how do you handle older hardware? I mean, you've been doing this for 5 years. What do your clients do with S19J Pros that are not profitable anymore? What is their strategy there? Because, and I'll add something here. When I calculate for customers of mine that want to, you know, retail deploy 1, 5, 10 machines, even 50, it's the same thing. I always tend to denominate everything in Bitcoin because we have a Bitcoin cash flow generating asset, right? And also for the listeners, like the only thing that you then need to forecast is Bitcoin price, because that informs how much sats you're paying for power. Right. And in doing it this way is a lot easier than forecasting what the network will do, in my opinion. So why am I saying this? Because every calculation that I do, if I say to someone, hey, you know, buy a miner, it runs for 2 years, you will only make more Bitcoin than you could have bought instead today if you have a chance to resell the machine at the end of its lifetime or at the end of the contract. Do you share that sentiment? And good question again. What do your clients do with their older gen machines?
Sure. Yeah, couple things to unpack there. So if I miss something, just remind me. But
sure.
It's interesting, like just in the hosting industry in the US and a lot of companies we work with pretty closely, there's a lot of people that will actually mine at a loss. They'll continue to pay their hosting bills at a loss because maybe they like the kind of emotionless dollar cost average, you know, they don't have to KYC and kind of that sort of thing. So for like the retail, you know, guerrilla miner, you know, whatever, like a lot of them will mine at a loss is what we found. We allow our clients to pause mining. So it's a very different situation where a lot of hosting companies, you know, if you're building a hosting company, one of the best things that could happen, not for us, but for other companies, is they see it as an opportunity. Clients in old gen equipment are not profitable anymore. Basically, they stop paying their bills. They take ownership of that equipment. And now that hosting company just ends up swallowing a lot of that hash rate. And now they own it themselves for pennies on the dollar, right? Our model is very different where I don't want any of our clients' equipment. Not because, of course, we want to expand their own hash rate, but I want our clients to have the ability to, you know, you're making this investment. We don't know what's going to happen, but you're making this investment, you know, because you're bullish on Bitcoin and whatnot. But making this investment into ASICs, and you know, the machines are no longer profitable. Our clients can pause their mining. There's no cost to do that. And then if the market shoots back up, they can unpause their miners, right? So
how long for, Nick? How long can they pause their mining for? Indefinitely?
Yeah, it's just like within the contract. I mean, we've had clients on pause for a year. We're moving to in the future on our new contracts for older gen equipment, like anything less than, I believe it's like 25 joules per terahash and less, like the J Pros, for example, will no longer be allowed to be paused on our new agreement, just because as a company, we can't have a ton of new, we don't want to run S9s at our site and, you know, Bitcoin goes up 50%. Now everybody wants them plugged back in and it's not feasible. So over time, there's going to be a natural progression of, you're going to have to move out of this equipment over time. It's just the natural progression of ASICs. But we've allowed our clients to pause, and they can pause and unpause once per month, basically. There'd never be a situation where they'd have to pause and unpause like every other day. But it just logistically, from a billing perspective, it's simple for us once per month. But we've had a lot of clients after the halving went on pause into the presidency, came out of pause, you know, when Bitcoin price ripped. So that's kind of our approach to it, where we're not trying to just like force our clients to go bankrupt and, you know, sell their hash rate to us for pennies on the dollar. You know, we want our clients to maintain their equipment, you know, have that optionality where they don't have to, if it makes more sense to buy spot Bitcoin because the price is low enough and your machine's not profitable, turn the ASIC off and buy spot, you know, and vice versa. So, you know, mining only makes sense when you're generating more than your electricity costs, more or less, you know. So if that's not the case, you have that optionality. As far as, I believe you were kind of asking, the second part of that question was
selling machines. Like, okay, yeah, you can pause your machine, you can just run it at a loss for no KYC Bitcoin, which comes as a premium, and then maybe you're in the green again. Do people sell their machines? And if so, who are they selling them to?
We have a marketplace. That marketplace has, you know, thousands of people have access. I mean, anybody in the world has access to it. So, I mean, that's been a great source of liquidity for clients, especially in like a bull market. People are going to pay a premium for units that are on the shelves. Just that's always how it's going to be. You saw it 4 years ago when the hosting market kind of popped up and people, I bought my first J Pro for, you know, $15,000, right? And probably didn't buy
it. I sold mine for 12.
So I probably bought yours. Yeah. So, I mean, we have a marketplace, clients can resell. You have that functionality to list it at the price you want and kind of accept bids from different buyers. I mean, there's public, private companies that sit in there and they'll place bids. I mean, there's a lot of liquidity in there for sure, especially in a good market.
Nick, follow-up question, have you considered profit split agreements? Where you just say, okay, power comes at cost and then you split the profits instead of the machines sitting there.
Yeah, we don't like it. We don't like it because we don't feel it's a good agreement for the client. Because if we do a profit share, if you do a profit share or rev share or whatever, you know, some companies do it. What happens is you have a much lower rate as a client, right? When hash price is low, but then when hash price is high, your effective rate, if you look at a lot of these agreements, when hash price is higher, your effective rate ends up being, you know, 8.5, 9, 10, 11 cents if the market's performing well. And then on our end, the reason we'd want to do a rev share is because we're taking the risk on the downside for you, but then we want the upside. But then when the market's higher, we look like the bad guys because we're getting overpaid in that situation. So our philosophy is just, you know, and then I guess the second part of that is we're just going to stay competitive with what the market is. There's really nobody at scale offering in the US like rev share. If you're running S19s, which most hosting operators don't even want to take in anymore, but public companies will get approached, you know, once a month and say, hey, I have thousands of J Pros. You want to plug them in on a rev share? And it's just like the margins are so thin. You know, we'd rather plug in new gen equipment at a higher hosting rate because it doesn't make sense for us to do a rev share on units generating.
I understand where you're coming from. However, you know, in the beginning, you also mentioned, you know, free market will regulate it. And sure. I mean, if you just say, hey, you know, we're going to offer this, well, it's up to the market to take it or not. These are the downsides and upsides for you as a client. You can take this off or not, right? But it's an additional service. So now the client can say, hey, I either make no money or I make some on my S19. And maybe, you do the same thing. You can switch once per month or something. And then if it's profitable again, they can switch back or something like that.
Yeah, it's doable. There's a few different bottlenecks. I mean, like from a billing perspective, billing in this industry is very complicated. So it makes the billing a little more messy and not as straightforward and simple. But then also there's not like infinite capacity. So on our end, we're going to fill all of our rack space all the time. And, you know, if we have, we would rather have units plugged in, you know, between 7 to 8 cents versus on a rev share with old gen S19s that are generating, you know, $60 per megawatt hour. It doesn't make sense, right? Because then our effective rate that we're getting paid is, let's say, 5 cents. And it's just,
yeah,
if we can plug machines in at 7, 8 cents, if we had infinite capacity, yeah, we would probably cut every deal possible in every which way.
Look, I hear you. I will push back a bit more.
Yeah.
Question before I push back, how much of the rec space you said is taken up by, or would you say is taken up by machines that are paused right now?
We always have every slot on our site filled. It doesn't mean it's on permanent contract though. So we have different agreements with different groups and also internally where we have like company hash rate that we'll unplug to make spots for clients. We have kind of what we call floating capacity where when we have empty space and we're waiting to sell it to clients, we'll have a big public company maybe come in and maybe we're doing repairs for them and their units are in a warehouse already. We'll plug them in for the time being until we need that rack space kind of on like a month-to-month contract to give us flexibility to, you know, use that existing rack space. It's a win-win for the public or private company because they're able to make money on their units that are sitting in our warehouse already, basically, while we're fixing them, whatever it might be. And then we can kind of resell into that space as we need. So how many units are on pause? Believe it or not, it's not a tremendous amount right now, even with hash price down. I mean, it's maybe 2 megawatts worth of S19s. We will unplug S19s if they're on pause for an extended period of time and put them in our warehouse. And then if clients want to go back online, we'll plug them back in. So we're constantly filling that rack space with more efficient equipment to make up for that delta. So if we had, you know, thousands of units on pause, a rev share might make sense if those units were still plugged in. But if we're unracking those units, you know, and we're
fair enough.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. But I would have said, like, if you have 1,000 machines sitting there on pause, not netting you any money while filling up the rack space, then the profit share might make more sense.
Technically, when we're on pause, and this is all in our agreement, but we keep the units running, but they run to our pool because we have to maintain a certain load with the utility company. We can't just shut off units. So we allow our clients to pause. It auto configures their units to our company account. And you know, it's like, oh, well then you're making my Bitcoin. Well, we're giving you the option to not have to pay. Like we're actually losing money in that situation because we should be charging you our contractual agreement of, you know, the 7 to 8 cents. And we're saying, hey, these machines are only making $60 per megawatt hour, not 80. And we're going to eat that and it's not going to cost you anything, you know? So, we have to keep the units running, but there are situations where like we've had clients on pause for a year. We unrack those units. We unrack them, put them in our warehouse. We'll plug more efficient units into those slots.
That's fair enough. It has to work for both sides. Otherwise you can't offer the service. Nick, how important would you say with the couple minutes that we have left is margin on the unit sales? Is that a large part of your revenue or is it mostly from the hosting? Do you offer send and host as well? Can I just send you my machines and you plug them in?
We're strictly buy and host. Most of our competitors are buy and host. You can find companies that aren't. What we're trying to do is not be a low cost leader by any means, but we feel we're very competitive with, you know, the 2, 3, or 4 companies that are, you know, our main competitors. You know, with what we're offering. So with all the value adds we bring, we just feel, you know, we're providing all the infrastructure, you know, kind of that white glove service. The profit on the margins on the equipment are important, of course. I mean, how we make money as a business, we sell the equipment, you know, we make a margin on the electricity rate. We build sites for some of these public private companies, do some consulting. And then we make money doing repairs for some large institutions as well. But definitely selling the equipment's a big thing for us. We have a lot of clients that have come from other companies and have a lot of machines elsewhere. And there's also just not a good logistically, you know, feasible solution to like accept machines from one client, but not another. And, so it's simple. we want to sell the equipment. You know, we are making a margin, and people can absolutely find cheaper pricing wholesale. But then it's, do I have somewhere to plug it in that I trust and, you know, that makes sense, right? So that's just kind of the reality of the market. The hosting market's always going to have a premium, especially at scale. You know, a lot of these companies come and go, and can you find somebody that's just starting a company in their backyard and has 100 machines plugged in and will, you know, give you a really low rate and all this good stuff? Yes. But in the US, again, with our competitors, you know, we're tailoring to that business owner, to that family office, whoever, and they want that hands-off experience. And I think with anything in life, finding the cheapest option does not result in the best service, I'm sure, as you're aware. So that's kind of our thought process there and how we make money as a company, I guess. So,
yeah, understood. Do you use customers' Hashrate also for their education? Like how much insight do people have into their mining? You say it's all hands off for them, but are there customers who want to, I don't know, have the foreman access and see what their miner is doing, how quickly the fans are spinning, and also educate themselves, right? Because, and I'll add this, I tend to tell my clients, look, if you would just want to do this as a passive investment, buy Bitcoin instead, you know. But if you come to me and say, hey, I want to do a DCA, or I want to learn more about mining and have like access to it, then you can only really get that additional subjective value if you have access to the machine data and you can change your pool or yourself and you can like try things out and stuff like that. Yeah. How much access do folks have with
the machine? Yeah, so we, like, for example, like our clients don't get VPN access or anything, just security reasons and whatnot, but we want to manage everything and make it hands off. We do have some clients that are much more technical and, you know, they want to get more into the weeds of things. So we have a whole educational thing on our website called Simple Mining Insights, where people can learn about different topics. But we've built an entire custom dashboard for our clients where they can view their miners. It's actually an API from Foreman specifically, where you can see all the units, hash rate, historical hash rate, your uptime, really a lot of information. Obviously you have access to your pool, but we generally don't give access to Foreman to our clients. We want to handle pool changes and all that stuff. In the past, when we started the company, we had people doing that. And when you have clients performing pool changes and doing different things, they may not be in sync with, you know, hey, maybe we don't want to perform a pool change right now because, you know, let me try to think of an example. Maybe it's really cold outside and like this specific unit is a little more sensitive to reboots in the cold. And we don't want to reboot this unit, you know, during this, you know, during this kind of, you know, in this climate. So there could be that. There's a lot of clients that would change their pools to the wrong mining pool. And now those machines are still running. And it happens. It's a common mistake. Those machines are still running. We're paying the electricity, but then you're not getting Bitcoin. And then at the end of the month, we send you a bill and you say, I got no Bitcoin. And we say, well, change the mining pool. So if it's on us, then we eat it. You know what I mean? If it's on the client, then what do we, then it's just not a good situation. So, we are bringing functionality back through our dashboard over the next, sometime in Q2 for clients to be able to change their pool on their end. But we give clients a decent amount of access to some data and whatever they request really. And over time, we're continuing to, a big push over Q2 is to kind of share a lot of these KPIs and different things we're tracking and whatnot to our clients. And for example, anytime a machine is offline, it generates an automatic ticket for that client. And then with the exact issue it's having, then our repair team will put all of the notes in there of, you know, chain one or chain two, you know, whatever the issue is, you know, find zero ASICs. So the client can actually see what's going on there. So they do have a lot of visibility into the process. Are they going to have VPN access? No, just because it doesn't make sense. That's not scalable across 500 clients. If we were managing one site for one large client, yeah, not an issue. But, you know, we always have to go back to what's scalable and what makes sense for all of our clients, and also not doing things that may cause operational issues or security issues. So,
sounds good. Nick, let's close it out. Is there anything that I did not ask that you wish I had?
No, I think that was a good conversation. Really enjoyed it. And appreciate you having me on again. Looking forward to when I'm in Cape Town. I'll have to, like I said, I don't think my fiance is going to want me doing anything Bitcoin related, but maybe we'll run into each other down there. And,
yeah, I won't tell her I Bitcoin as well.
Sure. I'll tell you, you're the tour guide. And
yeah. So. Dude, plug yourself, man. Plug yourself and tell people where to find you and your company.
Sure. Simplemining.io is our website. I mean, I think you can find all the information on us there. I'm not big on Twitter. LinkedIn's a good place for me. I don't even know what my handle is, Nick Garland. If you have any questions on Bitcoin, if we can help in any way on educate, we're big on education. So, I mean, we're happy to educate, whether they're clients or not. And if anybody has questions on whatever it might be, Bitcoin mining related, we're happy to help and be a resource. So, Jesse, really appreciate you having me on again. And I'm sure we'll have many more conversations here moving forward. Hopefully we'll see you in Vegas if you'll be at the conference.
I'll try to be there.
I really appreciate you having me on. So,
my pleasure. Nick, thank you so much for being on. Thank you for your time. Guys, I hope you learned something new. Until next time, see you. Bye-bye.